Time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is on assignment. He's actually back in Colorado. But guess what? Richard Campbell from .NET Rocks is here, along with Mary Jo Foley. We'll talk about the Windows event coming up next week, what we can expect, even maybe a surprise, one more thing. That and a whole lot more coming up next. There's whiskey, too, with Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 433, recorded Wednesday, September 30th, 2015. Trust me, I'm Ling. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/Windows to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/Windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. And by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually use. Use blogs, calendars, file sharing, forums, task management, even wikis to work better together with your teams. Sign up now and try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit. Time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers Windows Weekly. Every week we cover Windows. It's Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is not here, but Mary Jo Foley is. Hi, Mary Jo Foley.
Hello, Leo.
I'm all about Microsoft.com. And you have brought with you, I don't want to say a replacement. He's a good looking fella.
A friend
fella.
Of the family.
Yeah.
Who's that?
A man who brought me some fine scotch the last time I saw him.
Mm-hmm. I'm your professional alcoholic. I bring you alcohol. What else do you want from me?
Richard Campbell from the IT Edge. IT
Edge Intersection. That's right. String all the words together.
itedgeintersection.com.
Well, we got the Edge domain name, and then they went and made a browser out of it. So made like more.
That's
complicated
interesting.
For us.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. And the conference is coming up. What, next month?
Yeah, end of October. So nice. You know, it's almost this month. You know, tomorrow it'll be this month, and hoping you're going to be there, sir. I think we're going to work that out.
Yeah, we have to get a room, you and me.
Well, it is the MGM Grand.
Well, it's
they say you can do whatever you want in their rooms as long as you clean up the mess.
My favorite restaurant in the world is in there.
Oh, Robuchon, I presume.
Joël Robuchon.
I've had some very fine meals there.
This restaurant, Mary Jo, it's so over the top. They have a bread cart.
Oh, nice.
And the bread cart is all fresh baked bread from today. It's basically a mountain. Like, it's all bread all the way down. And it's all kinds. Brioche and, you know, everything. You know, buns.
And the butters. All the different
and
butters.
And there's a butter cart.
Well. I think we need to do this.
Yes. It's hard to get in. Even a month ahead, we might have a hard time. But we're going to try. Because if we're there, Lisa will not let me go to Vegas without eating there. There's two.
I have some friends. I think we'll be able to work it out.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
I would say dinner's on me, but I don't have $50,000 in the bank.
It's not quite that much, but it's not a cheap meal. This is not McDonald's you're going to.
So good. They have the regular restaurant next to it, the Atelier, which is a little more cafe-like and no less unaffordable, but it's good. But I love it. It's a good restaurant. Really good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So. Where is Paul, by the way?
Paul is in Colorado right now. He has some work things to do that he kind of forgot to mention. But now he remembered yesterday.
It's like that time he got the wrong airplane ticket. So good. Well, we'll see him next week because next week is going to be a big deal.
It is.
And of course, Richard is going to be part of that, I'm sure. Richard, besides doing the IT Edge intersection, is with .NET Rocks and Run as Radio. Mm-hmm. Where are you? Are you in Florida? I feel like you're in Florida. Is that right?
I'm in Vancouver, which is like Florida, only not
the complete other side of the country.
Yeah.
Complete opposite weather, but yeah. In every other respect. No.
Totally the same.
Totally the same.
It's been very nice here this summer. Very dry, relatively speaking. You know, not dry like California dry. You guys are crazy. But we've had very nice weather. Our big problem right now is the chafer beetle. So there's beetles eating my lawn. It's actually the crows yanking the larva out of the. So literally, lawns are being rolled up overnight into piles of dirt.
Wow.
So
is it John, Paul, George, and Ringo, or just the Paul and Ringo? Never. That's a bad joke. I'm sorry.
Just Ringo.
Just Ringo. That's bad enough. R. Wood says that Paul is in the air, which means there will almost certainly be an insider build released.
I know.
The minute he gets on the plane.
It happens every time. Paul leaves, and then suddenly a build comes out. It's like clockwork.
So October 6th, we've known about this for some time. Microsoft sent out invites. Surface
Pro
is next week. In fact, it's Tuesday. We'll do live coverage of their stream because I think they're streaming it from our studios.
Yep.
And then the following day, unless something really outrageous happens, in which case we'll rejigger the whole schedule. But the following day, you and Paul will dissect once you get back home. We tried to do it from there, but Microsoft says every room is in use.
It is. They're doing a lot of things in the venue. They're going to have an evening event. So they're going to be, as soon as we're out of there, they're going to be flipping it to set it up for the evening event. So it's hard to find a place in New York where you can podcast. He could come here, but I literally have like one chair.
Yeah, really? Do we know anyone who lives in New York?
Who has a place we could podcast?
You only have one chair?
No, I'm kidding. But I don't have enough room for us to do the show together, like side by side. I live in a really small place.
It really is small. But no, that's the trend now, right? Small house. You're in the small house movement.
Micro apartments.
I see nothing wrong with that, frankly.
No. Except when you need to podcast, then it's a problem.
So is it in the Meatpacking District? Where is the event?
No, it's in the Moynihan Station building, which is where they're going to build the new Penn Station. It's right across from the current Penn Station. That really beautiful building with all the pillars that is the old post office, the old Farley post office.
Nice.
So it's in there. It starts, we go in at 9. I think they start live streaming it at 10 a.m. on Tuesday.
10 a.m. Eastern.
East Coast time.
7
yeah, so early.
7 a.m. our time, which means I will not be there.
Yeah.
I'll be snoring. but tell us what we think that it's Surface Pro 4, right?
Right. We think it's Surface Pro 4.
Yeah.
Microsoft Band 2.0. The two Lumia flagship phones that we've talked about, CityMan and TalkMan. There might be another Surface device we keep hearing.
Oh.
But we don't know that for a fact. Like some people have said maybe it's a 14-inch Surface Pro in addition to a 12-inch one. Or maybe a 14-inch Surface, not Pro.
Will they call it the Surface Pro Pro?
Pro Pro.
I wonder if we won't get a lighter weight device. You know, the original Surface 3, well, it's the 3 Pro came out first, and we like that. That had lots of power. But the straight 3, that's an awesome device. I like it even better than the Pro. It doesn't do as much, but it's lighter. Battery life's great on it. I mean, I wonder if there's a variation on that coming.
Yeah, I know. Some people have speculated that. And the reason they're thinking it might be a Surface 4 instead of a Surface Pro 4 that's 14 inches, when Microsoft came out with the Surface Pro 3 last year, they said the peripherals that they had, like the docking station and the covers, would work with the next device that came out. Mm-hmm. So they could have just meant it will work with the next Surface Pro device and that there'll be another device that's not a Pro family member, but it'll be a bigger device. That's what we're thinking could maybe be the case. But we don't know. We're just guessing.
All we know for sure now is that the correct kind of device is a slate with a detachable keyboard that sort of self-stands.
Thanks to Google, we know that, in fact, that is the right device. I was saying this during,
everybody's making them now.
Yeah, I was saying this during the Google event. If nothing else, Microsoft must feel somewhat vindicated because Apple with the iPad Pro and its tilt keyboard, and now Google with the Pixel i, are doing exactly the same form factor. Although, come on, don't you think that magnet on the Google's tablet's kind of cool?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that we're innovating on this. You know, you think about when IE and Chrome started dueling back and forth, making better and better versions of the browser. Like, the, it took browsers forward 5-10 years in one. If they actually start really competing on this hardware, we're going to get better hardware.
What about lawsuits, though? I mean, aren't people kind of skittish about getting in a Samsung-Apple kind of situation?
I don't know. Can you really put a protection on a tablet with a kickstand or a keyboard? I mean,
maybe not. I don't know.
And is there any point, right? Like, winning a lawsuit's like winning an earthquake. Like, nothing good comes of this.
But for users, it's fantastic because we get choice. And one hopes that they cross-pollinate each other. I'd love to see Microsoft say, hey, that magnet thing's kind of cool. Let's see if we can do that, you know? One thing they do better than Apple, and a lesson Microsoft learned, is to have multiple angles. Apple's going to have one angle, and Microsoft learned that very early on. Apple wasn't paying attention. One angle.
Right, so Apple's always known better than we do how to make machines.
We'll
like, you're going to have one angle and you're going to like it.
Yeah, we'll see. Good. All right. So now they accidentally leaked the Talkman and Cityman, didn't they, last week in the store? What happened
this morning?
This morning. Yep. Oh. That's a little. You said Wednesday.
Got the wrong date.
It said Wednesday. Next Wednesday.
Yep.
So now we know everything there is to know about it.
Yeah, right? We already knew, though. It's like when you look at the specs that leaked, it was, 5.7-inch device is the 950XL, 20-megapixel camera, the Lumia 950, 5.2-inch device, 20-megapixel camera, both running Windows 10 Mobile. I mean, none of these specs were a surprise.
Right.
The most surprising thing, unlocked. It says.
Yeah. What that means is they're giving up on the carriers, right?
Well, they need to.
Yeah.
At least Verizon.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, notice that there are British pound symbols on there. This might be just a UK thing, too.
Right. And that's how you have to do it in the UK. I mean,
right. So it might only be the UK.
Right. They might have.
That's how they do it in the rest of the world.
The real
except
world.
For the United States and Canada.
Oh, you guys have it, too.
Oh, terribly. Yeah.
Rogers and Telus.
Yeah, it's mostly Rogers and Telus. And it's the same thing. The only difference is the Canadian twist is that we convert it to the metric system, which means it comes out 30 days later.
Takes a while.
And costs twice as much.
And costs twice as much because the exchange rate, who knows what the dollar's worth.
Right.
I think we're at 75 cents today.
I can't predict
I really like being paid in U.S. dollars. Every time the Canadian dollar goes down, like I get a raise.
I know. And when I worked in Canada, it just happened that the Canadian dollar was worth more, so that was a good thing.
That week.
That one week. Yeah, it was the end, actually. It was the last time it was still worth more than the U.S. dollar. I'm going to bring up I'm just going to bring up one thing, one little thing.
Okay.
It's a question because you guys are the experts. One thing that everybody's now doing is a fingerprint reader.
Yeah.
Is it hard to do that in Windows Phone? Is there some technical reason that they're – because I don't see one on this.
No, so on Windows Phone, the next two Windows phones, people are believing that there'll be an iris scanner for those. But on the Surface Pro 4, people are thinking maybe a fingerprint reader. Some people say maybe the built-in camera that will do Windows Hello.
Hello, yeah. But I think on a phone, of course, Microsoft doesn't, there's Android Pay and Apple Pay. Microsoft doesn't have a platform like that. But it's for more than that. I'm just so used to it now. That when I pick up the phone and I it's much more secure and I press the thing and it unlocks and the reason I say this is I've kind of come to the conclusion in my life that I got a couple of so-called new phones that didn't have fingerprint readers, the Moto X and the the OnePlus 2 does, the Moto X, and I just thought I'm not going to use it. I want the fingerprint reader.
Wouldn't you like an iris scanner?
I think you want the biometric thing, right? I mean,
well,
the biometric thing.
Well, iris would be just as good, absolutely. As long as it's... It, unless I have to, like, stand here and go...
Nah.
I mean, it depends. The fingerprint stuff is really well understood now. And by the way, it's not just Apple. Synaptics makes the one in a number of other phones, and it's in Samsung's phones, and it's fast. It's accurate. Yeah. It can be implemented securely, although apparently hasn't always been implemented. So, anyway, I'm just being nitpicky.
You know, you brought up the payments question. And so the one thing that we heard a little bit about earlier this year when Microsoft had WinHack China, we heard some stuff about them having their own alternative to this Apple Pay and Samsung, right? But since then, we've heard nothing.
Yeah. Do they have NFC? They have NFC.
They have NFC.
Yeah, they could do it.
But they were supposedly trying to get some contracts together or agreements together with different outlets, you know, the same way that Apple and Samsung have, where you could have a Microsoft Pay, say.
Yeah.
But nothing. Nothing since then. Nothing since March.
I also am thrilled to see that there was something. Oh, USB-C.
Yeah,
that's the new charging standard, and Google's new phones have it. Apple does it with one laptop, which indicates to me they might be thinking about it for the next generation iPhone. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be the weight of the future.
Yeah.
Though, also, you can't plug it in wrong, right? I mean, what else did you want?
That's a big advantage. The other thing is to implement it as USB 3.1 so that you get the high-speed bandwidth, you get fast charging, you get reverse charging. You can use your phone to charge another device. Mm. There's lots of advantages if they use that Type-C as more than just a physical connector, but as a true Type-C connector.
It's just the chipset gets more expensive when you start adding all those capabilities in.
Yeah.
And you want it everywhere. Like, you want it so cheap it's in everything.
Right. So on a cheap phone like the OnePlus 2, where it's just USB 2 with a Type-C connector, that's fine. As long as I don't have to get different cables. And
that's the main thing, right? No more $50 cables.
Oh, hallelujah.
That you only get from one place.
Right. No more proprietary. Yeah.
Great.
So good. That's good.
That sounds like it's going to be part of the Lumia phones, but we have not heard that's part of the Surface Pro 4. We've only heard Lumia phones on that.
Yeah, but it takes time, but I feel
like
this is going to be the next thing. And cheap charging, which is great. We always love that. Nokia, pioneered that, and I think that's still
There was some question if both of the two phones were going to have that or not.
Yeah. So one's a lower end, and the 5.2 is a lower end.
It's just it's got a slightly less powerful chipset,
right?
We think, and it's 5.2 inch versus 5.7.
A little weird. They're both the 950.
Yeah, 950 and 950 XL.
Extra large.
Extra large.
5.2 and 5.7 inches.
Yeah.
And supposedly pen support for the XL as well.
Ah, little note action.
He had said that.
That's nice. I like that. There is one thing these Lumias will do that no current phone does, which at least without some help, and that's Continuum.
Right.
And I think that's an interesting idea.
Right. We think they're going to announce that dock that was codenamed Munchkin that'll let you connect the Lumia phone up to a larger screen monitor and keyboard. We think that'll be part of next week, too.
Yeah.
Just this idea that PCs fit everywhere now, right?
Right.
That's enough horsepower to be a PC.
And it's not something we haven't seen before, but I just think
it's a nice touch.
Yeah. And these things are now powerful, so powerful, quad-core processors and all that, that maybe this is a good way to go. And Microsoft has an inside track a little bit because their UI is the same across the board. So, as you know, one Windows helps with that. Because when you use Android phone, and you put it on it's Android. So it's not a computer.
Yeah.
You don't feel like it's a computer. iOS doesn't feel like it's a full computer. Mm-hmm. But I think Windows Phone Mobile 10 could really feel pretty capable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's the same kernel,
which
has the advantages of security, consistency, networking consistency. Your VPN should work the same everywhere, that sort of thing. It's just a question of the services that sit on top of that.
Well, but the same apps too, right? If you buy those
universal Windows apps.
And the UI is similar.
Yep. Increasingly similar.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this makes Microsoft, of all the companies, is the best positioned to use this, to do this. Because I mean, we've
seen... we keep hearing there's one more thing at this launch, one more surprise. But I don't know. You know, some people have speculated maybe we'll get something with the HoloLens, like developer kit.
Oh, God,
I don't know.
I want some more HoloLens. I need more HoloLens.
Yeah, it feels early for me on that.
Yeah, me too.
I know.
Satya had a quote that he said 5 years for the final version of HoloLens.
Oh, crumb.
But you know what? He was counting back. I think he was counting back from when that first leaked, which was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Maybe.
I think he was saying a 5-year process.
I was also thinking in terms of, you know, you had the experience with the HoloLens at Build. I think the integration into the goggles is just so hardware constrained. They need one or two more generations of hardware before they're going to have enough processing power that you could fit on your head.
Yeah.
That's, when you put it that way, it sounds kind of funny.
But that's what it is, right? Like the prototype from January.
It's where a PC is cables. In the band.
Yeah, right. In your head.
Yeah. Right?
Well, and that's the real question. Is at what point is it going to be acceptable to wear a PC on your face?
Google Glass set it back years.
Yeah. But, you know, part of this is sort of that mindset of, when is it good enough that you don't care how dumb you look?
Right. Yeah. Right. I and it doesn't have to be that good looking if it's really useful.
Really, exactly.
It just Gant Glass had failed in two ways. It looked dopey and it didn't really do anything anybody wanted. It was a camera. But I love AR. I love that idea. I want to walk around with it. I want to wear it all day so I can, you know, look at people and know who they are and see their reputation floating over their head and, you know, stop walking into traffic. This is going to be so useful for me.
We'll see.
Right in the nick of time. What is this? Leo, put it on and you'll be back to normal. What?
You don't have to remember anything anymore.
I don't. So do we know what processor's in these? Did they say?
We've seen leaks saying the 950 would be Qualcomm Snapdragon 8080 hexa-core.
There's an 808. I don't know the 8080.
Maybe that's what it is. 808, sorry. And then the other, 810 octa-core.
The 810 is a high-end, yeah.
Yeah. That was the leak.
Okay, that would make sense. So it's pretty standard.
Yeah.
One more thing. You know what's great? And I have to say, watching the Google event yesterday, it just isn't fun when you know everything.
I know. It kind of spoils it, right?
And so if they could have one thing that they've really kept a lid on.
I know.
And just announce that, it would make everybody happier.
Yeah.
Well, because these phones have been like the worst kept secret.
Yeah. They have.
Like do we get to a place where this becomes intentional? Leak these things so we're all looking at that while you do this thing that's the surprise.
Did Nadella at Dreamforce say the developer kit for HoloLens is next year? I think he did.
He did.
Chatrooms.
Did he say that?
Amatui in the chat room says that. So it seems like the one more thing won't be that.
You know, I don't know if you guys saw over the weekend, there was a leak on a Russian site that had Microsoft Cardboard, like Google Cardboard, where you put your phone in and you get the augmented reality thing.
Or the VR.
I mean, the virtual reality thing.
Yeah.
Microsoft quickly took that page down. And I don't know if that could be the one more thing, but that wouldn't be as fun because it's already been done.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it does look right now that they bet on AR to the detriment of VR. And I think it was important for them to say, no, we do have VR. I don't know how much more you need to say, though, at this point.
I know.
Unless you have something.
Yeah. Well, and it's a different product, right? Like, for different purposes, too.
Oh,
AR is the hard problem. Like, you're taking on the hardest problem when you do AR. I like VR, but I'll use Oculus for that.
Right. Or... actually, the HTC Vive, everybody's really raving about with Steam. And that's a great partnership that I think is the dark horse the dark horse to watch.
Have you tried playing games with that?
Not with the Vive. I've played games with the Rift. Or, I'm sorry, Rift. I promptly got queasy as hell. It was
motion sick?
Yeah. I have a Gear VR, and I don't get motion sick with that, but... although my wife does, Lisa does, But I know this thing was you had hand controllers. You were running in the jungle and shooting. It was kind of like Far Cry. It was very much like it. And it was a really amazing experience. It was very vivid and realistic. And I think that's why I very quickly got queasy.
I get the sense that game designers are going to have to turn their games down a bit for VR.
Yeah.
The scary stuff is way too scary. That
did you see the bullet? Bullet Time? The epic demo that they did at the Oculus Rift thing? It was so violent. Yeah. You come out of a subway door and boom, you're blowing away people. And it's too real, in my opinion. It wasn't. And they even Epic didn't really turn up the reality engine on the Unreal Engine, but it still was too. It was kind of
too much
creepy.
Mm. Yeah.
Boom.
It is overwhelming.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I really kind of just want to wander around the streets of Paris and watch the Cirque du Soleil. I'm absolutely committed to getting VR cameras in our studio, so that when you watch live, you would have the choice of watching in VR and looking around. Won't be so good for this show, but from when we have people live in the studio to look around, you can actually control what you're seeing and look. And I think that'd be a great experience. And I think that's imminent. That's soon.
There's a lot of cool tech being built right now for 360 cameras and things and the software to edit out the infrastructure of recording something. So it feels like the camera is completely invisible.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I think we're going into a cool time.
We're real close to
it actually better.
Yeah. We're real close to that happening. I've said this on every show, so I apologize if you listen to all our shows and you hear me repeat myself, but Ricoh makes this Theta S. It's tiny. It looks like a little Apple TV remote control, and it's a 360 camera, and I got a tripod for it, and you just put it there. And I want to do a vlog, like a 3D vlog, where I'm talking, but then there's stuff going on the other side. You turn around, you go, whoa. Oh, that's what Leo was looking at. I just feel like it seems like this is a medium that is just beginning. And, you know, one of the things people have talked about that would right now is not being implemented. I don't think – you tell me if AR does this, if HoloLens does this. But the idea that the audio should also move with your head. So that if you're looking at this person, you should hear audio from that direction. But when you look behind you, that guy should get weaker and this person should get stronger. So you're
or it should pan at least,
it
right?
It should at least pan. Yeah. I don't know if it does.
I think it
that
needs
yet.
To. The Oculus does that.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess you're right. It's like surround sound.
Well, and it's good, and you know what the funny part is? It's good enough you didn't even notice.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah,
like as an audio guy, I was very conscious of that. But every time I brought it up, nobody mentions it.
Right.
And it's because it's so good.
It needs to.
It's correct.
So
and
what
correct
I,
is invisible.
What I'm thinking of is doing a play or something, a performance in which you're in the middle of something and there's things going on all around you. And when you turn to focus your attention to one side, you hear more of that conversation. So that it's a play that you kind of almost direct.
Hmm.
You know, like Tony and Tina's wedding or whatever, where you go, you're in the event. I don't know. I just feel
that makes the audience the cinematographer. You know, a non-trivial part of storytelling is the cinematographer.
Directing
attention. How do we shape the shot?
Yes.
Yeah. Now you're going to take that away. Now we expect the audience to focus on the right things.
Or it won't matter if they do.
What if there is no right thing? You know,
exactly.
What if you do a murder mystery at a dinner party
exactly.
and you can solve it from any direction?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, it takes a lot of work. It's like 3D chess or, you know, those build your own adventures. But I think exactly. You get different clues, but in the end, you get to the same place.
Maybe.
Richard and I are brainstorming here. I'm sorry.
We're making a company. We're going.
Like, wow.
But this is what happens. You have this new platform and new possibilities open up. And I think AR and VR are this is exciting times. If I were a kid in college, I'd really be thinking about how can I get in this game? Because this is going to
Whipping out the old guy creds, there's an opportunity for a new Myst. You remember Myst?
Yes.
A new Myst.
Exactly.
But using VR.
Exactly. There's all sorts of stuff. You know, in the Oculus.
In the sense that it will be a commercial failure, but be revered for decades.
That's all I care about. That's kind of my life story. Commercial failure. But I know in the Oculus Gear VR demo, there's a Paul McCartney concert, and you're on stage with Paul McCartney, and you're looking at the musicians. So some things lend themselves to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look around. Oh, Paul's playing the piano. Oh, look at that. You can watch the drummer, watch the bass. You just move around. Anyway, I don't know. I'm sorry, Mary Jo. We kind of got far.
No, it's okay. I'm just thinking to myself, and where Microsoft thinks the first HoloLens apps will be is Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Microsoft, right?
It is, right? Yeah.
It also makes a lot of it's also the price point, right? I expect it's going to be an expensive device, and it's got to have a significant return on investment.
Right.
And, you know, leading a mechanic through disassembling something by adding augmentation right on top of it, that's really compelling. Should we talk about the stores?
Let's take a break and talk about the stores when we come back. Okay. Richard Campbell is with us, and you got a conference coming up. Tell us a little bit about the IT Edge intersection.
So the intersection set of conferences started really wanting to put the Microsoft web developers beside the open web folks. So we had a conference called Angle Brackets. That was the open web conference. And then we did Dev Intersection. That was more the Microsoft stack. Now that, you know, 3 years ago seemed like a far out idea. Today, the two are so conjoined, it's hard to tell one from the other. But I found my favorite part of conferences was those intersection points, was in the hallways at lunch, different conversations you could have with that. And so bringing more of IT as part of the overall conference is that conversation about the role of Windows, the role of cloud, the role of DevOps movements in bringing these guys closer together. So that's the real idea, was let's intersect this audience as well with the larger community and build better programs, better
Love
applications for our users.
That sounds fun.
And we're going to have a great time.
People go to itedgeintersection.com if they'd like to sign up. And I think we're going to do Windows Weekly from there. I'm going to fly to Vegas.
I would like you to very much. Yeah. And if you register during the early bird and sign up for a workshop, we'll give you a Surface too.
What?
Yeah, everybody's got to get hardware, man. That's what it's all about.
Not a Surface RT though, right?
Who has Surface RT?
Come on, man.
I think I have three of the original RTs, and all their batteries are done.
Yeah.
You know, they're old enough now that it's like you have to have them plugged in all the time, and then what's the point of that?
What's the point of that?
Mine still works. My original RT.
Yeah. And what do you do with
I find
it?
Tablets become not so much individuals' devices as they are room devices.
Right.
So there's a Surface device in the TV room, Surface device in the living room.
Yeah, yeah.
It lives there.
Right. Yeah.
And different people
For
pick
me,
it up.
For me, there's
and use it.
One near my door, one near my table. Since I am in
and they're
one
all
room,
and they're
I can't
all touching one another.
Room.
It's there's no
There's only one room.
Surfaces everywhere. Our show today is brought to you by Wealthfront. Once you get to a certain age, you know that it's time to think about retirement. I hope you think about it before you get to that age, because it's too late once you get to that age, like 64 and a half. Now what? Wealthfront is about investing your money the right way for your retirement, for the family's financial health, to save up for a house. I don't know how to say this. It's strongly enough. It's fine if you want to take some money and gamble and play the market. But when it comes to your future, your financial health, your retirement, don't gamble. You need to invest for the long term. And this is not a trivial thing. Fortunately, there's Wealthfront. Now, you could, of course, go to a traditional advisor and pay huge fees, like 1 to 3, and this is absolutely the case, I know, because my mom is with one, between 1% and 3% out the door, plus hidden fees for transactions and changes. It just adds up. It slices into your money. Wealthfront makes it easy for anyone to get world-class long-term investment management. You can get started investing today for merely $500. I invite you to dip your toe in and see. You sign up for an account at Wealthfront.com. It goes right to work. It monitors your portfolios around the clock. It's all programmatic. It's all software. And because it's software, it can do some really smart things like tax loss harvesting and direct indexing to optimize after-tax returns and lowering your tax bill. These are the kinds of kind of soft things software can do really, really well. It's very hard for an individual to do unless you're on it all the time. Now, they're not doing quick, fast trading. It's not, you know, it's not day trading, but it's trading that is optimized for the best risk-adjusted return net of taxes and fees. And you never have to guess. It's transparent. It's accessible. You can see your accounts in one place, your personal, joint retirement. You can see every trade they make on your behalf right on your dashboard, on your desktop with the mobile app. And all of this, not 1% to 3% per year, but 0.25% per year, 25 basis points. And there are never any hidden fees or commissions. It's very affordable because you don't have to pay computers. They work cheap, but they do a better job than humans. No additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. It is such a success. They've grown 20 times in the past 2 years. They now have $2.6 billion in client assets under management. Wealthfront, I want you to find out the best thing to do. Go to wealthfront.com/windows, and you can sign up. You'll tell them your risk tolerance, your time frame, you know, all the usual questions. It doesn't take very long. Then they'll give you a free personalized investment portfolio. They'll actually show you what they would invest in. So you'll see the allocation they recommend. And just for you, if you sign up to invest, minimum is $500, but up to $15,000 free of charge, not even the 0.25%, free of charge forever. For compliance purposes, I have to tell you, Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. Claim your offer today, wealthfront.com/windows, wealthfront.com/windows. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. And make sure you use that special URL to let them know that's where you heard it. Wealthfront.com/windows. Richard Campbell is here with Mary Jo Foley. Paul Theriot has the week off. He'll be back next week with Mary Jo. And I bet you'll drag some others along to talk about the event October 6th, this coming Tuesday. With one more thing, I hope.
We hope to.
I hope. Who knows what that will be, but one more thing. So stores, timing on this is pretty good. They're finally going to have a store down the street.
I know.
Yay.
The New York store. Yes.
Where is it going to be?
The New York flagship. It's right near the Apple Cube on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
Well, that makes it easy to find.
It does.
Jeez,
yep. Yep. It's the old,
I hope they don't give out directions like that.
The old New York Fendi headquarters
Fendi.
Is now the new Microsoft store.
I remember the Fendi store.
Yeah, that's where it is.
Fifth Avenue Fendi
it's
store.
It's at 53rd and Fifth Avenue. It's going to open on October 26th.
Oh, nice.
So a few weeks after the event.
Do you think that's an important date?
I wonder if it's something like, and you can pre-order devices now, or you could actually get devices then.
Yeah. 20 Not days sure. later, the devices will be in store.
Yep.
That would make sense.
They're also opening a new flagship store in Sydney on November 12th.
Cool.
So they're starting to finally open flagship stores in places where we have had none.
Nice.
Which is nice to see.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, I hope we'll get a report from you. In fact, maybe you can do a Windows Weekly standing at the inside the Microsoft store or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked to them in the past about once they opened the flagship store on Fifth Avenue, could we ever tape a Windows Weekly
a
there?
Studio.
And they were like, yeah, we're open to that.
I would love to do that.
Yep.
We
it's usually just a little training area in these stores,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Sort of in the
yep.
back. And
we did that, at the San Francisco Apple store many moons ago.
Mm-hmm.
And a hacker came in, stole the Wi-Fi, and redirected all our searches to Goatsee. It was great. It was fun.
Yikes.
Fortunately, he was easy to catch because he kept giggling. He was sitting in the audience going, So we kind of knew who it was, got rid of him, continued on.
Yep.
New Microsoft devices blog. What is that?
Yeah, so This is another kind of hint about what's going to happen next week, I think. Microsoft today launched a unified Windows devices blog. So they took all these different separate blogs they'd had, Surface, Lumia, the Band, HoloLens, and they're creating a single blog now.
So what is it? Okay, read the tea leaves on that. What does
that
mean?
These are all Windows 10 devices, Windows 10 powered or part of the Windows 10 ecosystem. So now that there's one blog, maybe we're going to start seeing more of these devices debut. And the fact that HoloLens is here has a lot of people kind of like, are we going to hear something next week or not?
So this is kind of like this is kind of establishing a line of business almost like.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like
I think it speaks more importantly to the Band, right? The Band was kind of an odd duck. Its development model's different. Its chips are different. I'm hoping the Band 2 actually becomes part of the Universal App story.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about that at this point. Right.
The rumor is no. The rumor is it is not yet going to have a Windows 10 core when we see Band 2.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll be wrong. That would be nice to be wrong
on
that one.
It's not the end of the world, though. I mean,
no, it's
my
not.
Apple Watch is running watchOS, not iOS.
Right. It doesn't
and
really.
It still talks to the Apple.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's still part of the ecosystem, even if you have firmware inside, right?
That's the key. So the Band should automatically sync to your Microsoft device. You should be able to configure it, set it, notifications, all of that stuff.
Yep.
But you can do that. Can you do that already?
I don't have a band.
But it's challenging. The development model's quite a bit different. And I'm putting my dev hat on here saying, hey, let me use the skills I already have. That's Microsoft's whole story, right?
Yeah.
Is that I could take the skills I've got and now work on this new platform.
Right.
And Band is very much a C development environment, and that's a different skill set. So it makes it hard to recruit that army of Microsoft developers to contribute to a device.
CC or C sharp or?
CC.
C.
Well, C++, but you know.
Yeah. Not C#, not .NET.
No.
Not XAML, but C#. Wow.
Or but, yeah, C++. Without that runtime running on the device, you don't get access to those languages.
That's right. That makes sense. Huh. That's interesting. So developing for it is really a separate, completely separate.
It's a different skill set.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the limiting factor, right? It's like, what skill set can you use and what you have access to? Microsoft's strength's always been leverage the skills we've got.
Right. Well, the Band is currently a little bit of an orphan, but could go somewhere. There's definitely a market for it. Maybe they did.
I mean, it can connect to the other devices, though, right?
Right. Right.
I just think they were kind of surprised at the success the Band had. You know, it kind of leaked out, and they were sort of forced to release it. Then they immediately ran out of them. That it seemed like they've just been surprised by it every step of the way.
Yeah. Microsoft privacy.
Man.
We won't look at your stuff, honest.
It feels like every week we talk about this, doesn't it?
I read this to Steve Gibson yesterday on Security Now, and he almost snorted his coffee.
I'm sure.
Well, I mean, I kind of want to emphasize that Apple says the same thing. Everybody says the same thing. There's no way to verify it. And you have to trust them or not. But I think it's good that they at least said it.
Yeah.
It just took a little while to get to there.
Yeah, the timing was odd, right? Like, it seemed like the whole privacy debacle was kind of quieting down. And then suddenly Microsoft does this blog post that reiterates, hey, we're not snooping on you. And it kind of got everybody back into panic mode.
we fell off the front page. Let's stir up. I love Paul's headline. And if you know Paul Theriot, you get that this is
exactly.
Microsoft finally confirms that Windows 10 does not violate your privacy. And then there's a happy man. It looks a lot like Andrew Zarian, I might point out. Where can I find the?
It's on blogs.windows.com. It was a post they did earlier this week. The one point they made again is that Microsoft is not snooping your email and using that to serve you up ads.
That's actually a big point.
That is a big point.
That's the Gmail man thing.
That is, yep.
Yeah. Well, and a big piece of this is still the Dr. Watson stuff, collecting where machines are having problems and sending it back.
Did you
genuinely
say Dr.
makes
Watson?
The software better. Yeah, Dr. Watson is the underlying
really
library.
Dating yourself.
Oh, yeah,
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah.
That's a really
good
point,
though. That's what
Microsoft
used to call it.
Yes. This has been around since the days of Dr. Watson, which was like Windows, was that 95 or 3? Or
95.
Dr. Watson.
But it's that basic, you know, the whole thing that happened when the internet took a hold with Dr. Watson was now we can take this stuff and fire it up so that we know it's these drivers that are the majority of the problems. Right? You know, the problem space is huge. You're always going to get a certain number of errors. The trick is dealing with the most common 20% of them. That's 80% of the problem. So if you can know what that 20% is, and that means looking at the data as a whole. It's not what people complain about, what gets submitted, but collecting everything. And that was Sanofsky that drove that back in the day. I don't want focus groups. I want to collect everything.
Well, I know it isn't timely, and we should. You know, it's all calmed down, and Microsoft should just let it go. But I, for one, am glad that they at least made the statement.
They said it.
I think they should have said it earlier.
Yes.
For whatever reason, at least they said it. But the point again is. You know, Apple says this too, and I guess it's just who you – do you believe them or do you trust them or not?
Do you have a choice?
But and as I've said many times, living in the 21st century is a trust exercise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You trust people all the time. You trust that the person who built this building knew what they were doing. You trust that the guy who's in the opposite lane as you go over the Golden Gate Bridge isn't going to suddenly veer into your lane at 60 miles an hour. It's just that's life. It's a trust exercise. And I don't care what you say about computers and software. Unless you're writing and compiling your own code, you're trusting that people are going to do the right thing.
And even if you are, that Intel still got microcode running in that processor.
Oh, you have to build your own computer too, with your own microprocessor.
I'm melting my own sand. Yeah. And it's all going to be me.
And your own internet.
Right.
Did you see the piece recently published about the guy who made his own sandwich from scratch over a period of 6 months? He grew the wheat. He slaughtered the chicken. $1,500 and 6 months later, he eats the sandwich. And goes, it's okay. It wasn't even a good sandwich.
A little dry.
Yeah. Took a long time.
Exactly. Welcome to life. There's this kind of paranoid streak that people have, and it makes me sad because what it really does is it slows down innovation and adoption of technologies, and they really aren't fully examining what's going on. So good, Microsoft. I'm glad you said it.
I'm sure
that if you didn't trust them. It didn't change your life.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you do trust them, it didn't change your life.
Yep.
I decided to trust them or to, you know, it's like, so what? Mm-hmm. Even if they did read my email, so what? I don't care. Yeah.
I mean, as a journalist who covers Microsoft, I kind of care.
Well, you have a higher, you have a higher standard that you should probably, if you really want to be smart about this and you're covering Microsoft or you're covering a government or doing something that interests might not like or want to oppose or might even use against you, you should be using encryption.
Yep.
All the time.
A different email service.
Yeah. Well, I would start not with Outlook. Yeah. But I think
I don't worry that much about it because you got to think about how much do I matter in the grand scheme, right? Is Microsoft really
going to be? It's not all about you. What are you talking about?
That's kind of what strikes me is this is kind of modern solipsism of it's all about me. Yeah. What are they going to do to me?
Right. If they read my email, they would be so bored. It's like,
Well, and even when you get to this targeted ad thing, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it, but as opposed to what? Untargeted ads? Send me more irrelevant stuff. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, what people, I mean, let's face it, people aren't telling the truth. They hate ads, period.
Yeah.
They just hate ads. They hate my ads. They hate your ads. They hate ads. In any form or fashion, they hate ads. People would like a world where there was no advertising.
Sure.
But
then they also complained that services didn't exist.
Right. Yeah. No advertising. There's no Facebook, no Google, no. I mean, Microsoft would be considerably smaller.
and you'd be paying for more things that are ad supported.
Yeah. Get ready for the bill.
Yep.
People make the point that ads, you pay for ads anyway because it's built into the price of the product. But at least, you know, It's spread out.
Yeah. You know, we do the NPR style ads on .NET Rocks, which are completely in line with our voice, and they're products that developers use.
Right. That's a brilliant biggest way to argument, do it.
It's as good as we can get to make it at least. Right. The biggest comment I get is people saying, I'm annoyed with you that I listened to this ad because it was so smooth.
And it made me buy the product.
I was listening to it.
That's what I get.
And they're good products.
Well, they are. We try not to give advertise stuff that's not what people would want. And
it's a hard problem.
This is an old conversation that's been going on lately, and I didn't mean to get us in that.
It's just come back around again, right? Yeah. The ad blocking software has gotten prevalent, and advertising on the internet isn't working all that well.
Do you think Microsoft got a bum rap for the amount of data they collect in Windows 10?
I'll let Richard answer, and then I'll answer.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it's any more or less. I mean, how do you know one way or the other?
Right.
The thing that, when I talked to IT folks, the thing that they were more upset on the Win 10 side was the preloading of so many updates. Yeah. It's like, hey, what's 6 gigs of stuff doing in a hidden folder on my machine?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Data collection doesn't really cost you all that much or consume that much. It's the preload that I think, and the preload made a lot of sense in the initial deploy. That's what kept the internet from going down. I get that, but it's still going on.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I would say the reason they got the bum rap was a lot of people just choose express settings. They don't customize when they're installing an operating system. So suddenly everything is turned on when you have Windows 10 install. And, you know, you can argue, should they have done that? Should they have made on the default instead of off? That's kind of where they get really hit, I think. But I understand what they're doing. I mean, they're saying most people won't turn it off. We want their telemetry data, so we warn them that what we're doing, you know, especially around Cortana, what we're collecting.
Yeah.
And if they make the choice to say yes, go ahead, then they did it.
I think Microsoft's done it as well as you can do it. I know that's kind of a contrarian point of view, but
I think it's just the default on versus not. And then as Peter Bright said on Ars Technica a few weeks back, there are some cases where they are collecting stuff even when you turn the service off, that there's still some information going to them. And this update this week from Microsoft didn't address that.
Right. We showed this on Security Now yesterday, the best website in the history of the world.
If you're an epileptic, look away.
This is lingscars.com. And I've actually corresponded now with Ling Valentine, the woman who created this. The funny thing is I'm running an ad blocker. Nothing is blocked because it's all coming from her site. And she actually is proud. She's doing this on purpose. And she's proud of what she calls the crap JavaScript on her site. But my favorite part, let me zoom in a little bit, is the chicken that's wandering around her Twitter feed.
That's brilliant.
Amazing.
That's hilarious.
This is the definition of craptastic.
That's what this is. Mm-hmm. This is, and it goes on and on. There she is. It goes. it's just crazy. You know what? I love this site.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So I asked Ling if she would be on Triangulation because I want to talk to her about it, and she said, "I'm really busy right now, but maybe in a while." She's so funny.
She's brilliant.
It's just the. It's so over the top. It's in the UK. It's just over the top. It's so funny. And there she is. You can trust me. By the way, even Ling says, it's okay. You can trust me. I am Ling. I'm Microsoft.
I love it.
Trust me. I'm not collecting any information. Now I can't close the site, but okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's move on. Other topics today. This is kind of is this something that will matter to people or not? Microsoft financial reorg. People care about that? I think it will. Tell us about it.
So 2 years ago, Microsoft totally revamped how it reports its financials. It created these 5 new categories. It made it so hard for the people who followed Microsoft to kind of figure out which products were doing well and which were not. It really hid a lot of stuff, I felt like. in those five categories. And this week they said, when we report our next earnings, which will be on October 22nd, we're going to start using a whole bunch of different categories. And they collapsed it down from 5 to 3. And to me, the groupings make a lot more sense now. So there's one group that's Office 365 and Dynamics ERP and CRM. That's one group that they call productivity. There's Intelligent Cloud. That's going to be Azure, Windows Server, SQL Server, Visual Studio, all the enterprise products. That's another group. And then this group they call More Personal Computing. It's everything else. So it's all the stuff typically on Windows Weekly we care about. So Windows, all kinds of Windows licensing, Bing, advertising, MSN, Surface, phone, Xbox. That's all in one group now. So, you know, some people are thinking this is going to make it even harder to figure out what's doing well and what's not.
Is that the purpose?
Some people think that's why they do that. But I actually think it's going to make it a little easier to track going forward, because we already know that those products that are in the more personal computing group, they're still making money, especially Windows. But they're kind of the products Microsoft sees as not in their front line, I would say. Their front line these days is productivity, which is Office 365, and the cloud. So they both got their own groups now that are separate from everything else. Before, Windows was kind of all threaded through all these different groups, and it really made it hard to figure out how they were doing with Windows. Now it's going to be a little more obvious, I think.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like those three buckets line up with the three buckets that are Microsoft's focus as a whole.
Yep.
You know, I get the sense that Satya is aligning the entire business. And the fact that he's financially reporting the same way, I don't know how much that matters to us externally, but for the company itself, for the employees, it's like your goal is in these three things and they appear here.
So it does impact kind of how the company gets run.
It does.
I think so.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. The trick will be now. This was already the case, though. Windows Phone, Windows, and Surface and Xbox are all lumped in as with the Android patent royalty stuff. That's all one group of stuff.
They would like to hide that number, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you want to hide a couple of those numbers, probably, like Windows Phone.
Yeah. This is the hide numbers bucket.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So I would also say
that's kind of a corporate norm too, right?
Like I know it is.
Apple doesn't break out their tablet numbers from their phone numbers, from their Apple TV numbers.
You want to tell people as little as you can, but there are legal requirements with publicly owned companies. Yep. So you manage it in such a way that you say as little as possible, and then if it's really good news, you issue a press release.
Yep. Right.
Right.
And that's how I would do it if I were intelligent. Yeah. I just tell everybody everything.
If you had billions of dollars to manage, that would be what you'd do.
Yeah. That's why I don't. And of course,
I have one guy speculated Microsoft did this because they want to spin off that More Personal Computing group. I don't actually think that is why they did that, but we'll see. I know ValueAct, you know, the activist investor on their board.
They would love
they want them to be all enterprise and no consumer.
And they want to cash in when they split out that stuff. I mean, activist investors have really only one goal in mind. How do I get as much money out of this company as quickly as possible? Yeah. They're not interested in anything else.
It's funny how far we've come full cycle on this, too, because that's the original DOJ discussion going back to the 90s. That Microsoft should have been broken up into these chunks. Yep. And now you're looking at it again in a different form.
Is it kind of the same chunks?
Pretty close.
Interesting.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, Dvorak always said that before even maybe not before the DOJ investigation, but Dvorak always thought there'd be more value in the company if you literally made these three companies.
But you're also speaking of a time when the bigger fish like Windows restricted the smaller fish inside of Microsoft.
Right. That's exactly right. They said, you know.
And that's now that problem's gone away largely. Right. It's not that big a deal anymore.
It's one of the reasons. I mean, the fact that you have an iPad version of Office before you have it on Microsoft's own touch first platform is a perfect example. That would have never happened before.
Yes.
No.
Because you have to protect the crown jewels, and they had so much power that they'd say, no, you're not.
Well, and in fact, they did.
I mean, we know they did.
That's exactly what went
on
for the longest.
That's why there was no courier. That's why they're on and on and on. You got to protect the that's to Nadella's credit, is that he's had enough clout. I guess he's got the support of the board, and he's able to get, and maybe of his managers, that he's able to do this.
Yep. And there were lots of people below Nadella that believed in this a lot, mostly the guys that weren't in Windows. And now they've been, you know, given free rein to do the things they thought were the best for them.
We shouldn't forget, Nadella did not come from the Windows division.
No, he did not.
Fascinating. Let's take a break. Come back. Lots more to talk about. Richard Campbell is here from .NET Rocks and the IT Edge
Intersection.
I always that last word gets me every single time. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Lots more to talk about. But first, let's talk about hiring. If you're a small business, if you're in HR, if you're the person responsible for hiring, you know it's a weighty responsibility. The entire company really rises or falls based on the people you hire. That's, in effect, what a company is. People getting together to achieve a common goal. Those hires will determine how well you do that going forward. Fortunately, the internet has come along and made this process a lot easier, but also maybe a little bit more confusing. There are lots of job boards out there, but which one's right for the position you're trying to fill? Where are the people you're looking for lurking? But ZipRecruiter solves all this, cuts right through it. With one click of the mouse, you post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, Craigslist and Twitter and all of that. You really can get to the people wherever they are that you want to hire. Now, sometimes I tell people this and they go, well, wait a minute. I don't want to get a million emails. I don't want to get calls till the break of dawn from people all over the world. No, you don't. This is the beauty part. So go to ZipRecruiter.com. Post your job listing. The first thing that happens, 6 million current resumes. They match it up. Within 24 hours, you will have lots of candidates. And, of course, because you're posting to all these job boards, many, many more will come in over the next day or two. They won't come to you. They won't ring your phone. They go right into the ZipRecruiter interface where it's easy to rank them and eliminate the bad ones and pick the right candidate fast. You couldn't do a better job. And you lickety split. So this really serves your needs. It's fast. It's easy. It matches you up with the right. Think of it as dating for your next employee, using that kind of really great technology to get the next person fast. We had an email from Dan. He was a ZipRecruiter client and had to tell us. He said, "Quote: The hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is that you have to spend extra time recruiting exactly at that time when you're short-staffed. You know, it's exactly the worst time. But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage the candidates in one place." We don't talk enough about that interface. It really is huge. It just makes it so much easier to find the right person and find them fast. You don't want to spend a lot of time in this process, but you do want to get the right person. That's critical. Can you try it for free for me? Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. They've got 4 days for you to give you a very good idea of how the whole thing works. You will get many, many applicants in the first day or two. So 4 days is more than you think. ZipRecruiter, you may have, there's that one person out there waiting for you. You may have that person hired in 4 days. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. You'll love their support too. And, of course, 100% satisfaction guarantee. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. We're talking Windows with Mary Jo Foley, Richard Campbell. Paul has the week off. .NET rocks.
I had Paul on Run As Radio last week, and we were talking Win 10. And, you know, Run As is aimed at the IT audience, so the main conversation was, well, when am I going to put Win 10 into my enterprise?
Wow.
And the consensus seemed to be, wait, that the Win 10 version we have right now that came out in July is very much a consumer version of Win 10. And there's a bunch of stuff we need on the enterprise level that is coming but is not out yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think even for consumers, that's kind of the probably the real advice is wait till threshold two, right?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah, it's going to make a difference. I mean, a lot of consumers are pretty happy with it. I have it on my laptop
I'm happy.
And so forth.
But, yeah.
But my domain join machines, you know, the in the organization, it's a lot about group policy and the more sophisticated IT requirements that are still pretty challenging in Win 10.
Yeah.
It was a fun conversation. Talk for a half hour with Paul. It was a gossip fest.
When is it not a gossip fest? He's such it's a gossip, true. That Paul Theroux. No, he never gossips with us, Mary Jo. I don't know why.
Never.
I got to ply him with whiskey. That's the difference. Windows 10 for IoT, the Internet of Things. There's an update to the preview. Who wants to take this one?
I will.
Why not, Mary Jo?
Why not? So Microsoft in August said that they had RTM'd, I don't know if they actually use the word RTM, but they RTM'd Windows 10 IoT Core, which is the version of Windows 10 for makers, so things like Raspberry Pi Board 2 and such. And this week they rolled out an update to that, which is actually a new preview build. So they're doing the exact same thing with IoT that they're doing on Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile. After the RTM, they're going to continue to push out regular preview builds to people who are insiders. And this is a new build, 10531, for people who have the Windows 10 IoT Core. Has a bunch of new features, mostly in response to what people who had been testing and using the product had asked for. So things like secure boot enabled, but a lot of bug fixes, some improved Node.js stuff, a lot of different things for people who are making things using those boards. They also announced in partnership with a company called Adafruit.
I love Adafruit.
A little starter kit for Windows 10 IoT Core. So you get an SD card with Windows 10 IoT Core on it, and you get lots of parts like wires and cables and you can use that to build something. It costs $115.
Raspberry Pi? Yeah.
Raspberry Pi 2?
Yeah.
Yep.
Adafruit does a lot of Raspberry Pi stuff.
Oh, do they? Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Lady Ada. You should know. I'm surprised.
I know who Ada
is. You know Lady Ada, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, she's the greatest. Indeed. And they do a show, Ask the Engineer, and all the engineers are women. I just love it.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. Adafruit is awesome.
I didn't know about Adafruit, but I know about Ada.
Yeah, Lady Ada.
Yep. By the way, the Windows IoT team will be at IT Edge Intersection.
Yay.
We did a workshop with them in the spring, had room for 100 people. They were lined up out door. Everybody wants to play. They had all the little hardware kits. Everybody loves a PC the size of your thumbnail.
It's even crazy. Here, there's been a ton of interest in that Raspberry Pi running Windows 10. A ton of it. Yep. Hobbyists love it. Of course, if you're a product guy, you think of all sorts of ways you could use it.
It causes explosion. And our mutual friend, my partner on .NET Rocks, Carl Franklin, is off doing projects exactly like that, where they're putting out arrays of sensors with these little devices communicating via Wi-Fi to central repositories, just reams and reams of data for different organizations who are just trying to understand what's going on in pipelines and office buildings and things like that.
Cool.
Nice.
And at some point, we'll probably delve into this issue of security, because that's one of the problems with the Internet of Things is people are not doing the due diligence to make sure that it's secure, and it can become a gateway into your home network and all sorts of problems.
And I tell you, Microsoft's actually take this right on the head.
I'm sure.
A lot of this new hardware is encrypted by default. You don't have a choice. It's HTTPS all of the time.
Good.
You can't turn it off.
Good. Yeah, there's an onus is on them, of course, to deliver a platform that can't be, you know, hacked.
Well, I don't know if you can go that far, but at least have you, quote, fall into the pit of success, right? we lead you on the right path. Let's start with encryption.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason any data should be flowing in plain text. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. OneDrive for Business. Are we getting there? Are we there
yet? We're sort of getting there. Yeah, today Microsoft talked about how they're going to release the promised OneDrive for Business sync client, the one that's going to be the common sync client on PCs and Macs for OneDrive for Business. So they've been privately testing it, which I don't think a lot of us knew. I didn't know that anyway, the private test of the next generation sync client, as they call it. But today you can go on their site and you can sign up to get on the wait list if you also want to test this yourself. So this brings the OneDrive for Business and the OneDrive Consumer stuff together with a common sync engine.
Oh.
Which is something they've been promising for a long time.
All I know is now, I just hear you and Paul bitching about it all the time.
Oh, OneDrive. I know.
That's all I really know. I mean, I use it like an amateur. I use it like Dropbox, and I have it on all my devices. And it's
okay for you.
It's fine. Right? I have unlimited sync because I subscribe to Office. And I make sure I put everything I can onto it. And it works fine.
It's totally fine for me, too. Yeah. It's not fine for people like Paul who put like book chapters and all his music and a lot of stuff. Like I've used like 1% of my OneDrive.
I can't fill it
store.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. So this also brings people selective sync, which is something they really wanted. This is going to be part of that common next generation sync client. They also rolled out some new updates for OneDrive for Business for Android and iOS devices and said Windows Phone coming soon. We hear that a lot these days, but yeah. No update on placeholders for all the people who are still mad that Microsoft is deprecating placeholder files. They said, yep, we don't have anything to say about that yet. And also nothing to say about our promised unlimited storage for OneDrive. Sorry, nothing to say there either.
Well, we got it, don't we? I mean, we have it.
Not really.
Well, we have a terabyte, right? And then it turns
for me, terabytes. Is unlimited.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah. But somebody said to me, I can't remember. Oh, yeah, as soon as I filled up the terabyte, which I don't know how they did that, but then it went to 2 terabytes.
Yeah.
So it's unlimited.
Yeah. I don't know. So I know a lot of people are not that happy with OneDrive. I have had fewer problems than many, I think. But they are, the thing I'll give them credit for, they're adhering to this roadmap that they put out at Ignite this year where they said, here's which quarter we're going to deliver each of these pieces in, and they're going forward with the web. With the web experience, with the Android, iOS, Windows Phone, and the Sync client. So they are actually delivering on it. Give them a pat on the back when they can get it.
Nice. You know, it's funny about that terabyte thing, too, because all it is a number on your screen.
Right.
It's not you know. When you own a terabyte in your house, you have a hard drive that holds a terabyte. When you have it in the cloud, you don't actually know what
it's
that
meaningless,
means.
Meaningless, yeah.
Yeah.
And try and upload a terabyte in any reasonable amount of time. It's not, yeah. Do you would you put albums up there? Would you put stuff that you really cared about, Richard? I mean, you know.
I mean, I keep a backup copy of a lot of important things in the cloud, but my music all comes from CD. I'm not a pirate. I ripped it all myself, right? So I could reconstitute that collection. Right. It just would take a lot of time.
You don't want to do that.
No, I really don't.
No.
But, you know, it's sitting on a drive array here at home. I see no reason to sync it to the cloud. That seems kind of nutty.
Also, one copy of anything, wherever it is not really a secure proposition. So that's why I use OneDrive, because I have copies of stuff there and Dropbox and everywhere else, right?
Yeah.
It's free.
I'm pretty sure I own cloud storage accounts I've completely forgotten
about.
Yeah,
I know.
That have
someday. Have you ever found a floppy?
Yeah.
And you go.
And you find a drive.
Then you find a drive. Yeah, that's the hard part now. And you go, what is, it hasn't happened recently. But every once in a while, you know, or an old zip disk, and if you can manage to read it, it's like, maybe 5 years ago I found a floppy that had a bunch of code I'd written on it in the 90s. I was like, how nice is that?
Look how smart I used to be.
I used to have a brain. Assembly language code. I have no idea what I was doing there.
I did find a stash of zip files that were like old drives I thought were about to fail, zip drives, things like that. Yeah, that I zipped up and stuck away, labeled with dates, and they haven't been touched since, and they're 15, 20 years old.
The other day.
They just moved from store to store. It's, you know, it's the box of stuff from high school that's still in your attic.
It is exactly. It's your baseball card collection.
Yep. Still in there.
The other day I opened up the back of the BlackBerry I used before the iPhone came out, and lo and behold, there was an SD card. It was like whatever that weird format was in those days. And 2 gigabytes. Ooh. So I pulled it out just to see what's on there. And there was a bunch of great stuff, old pictures. And ringtones, it was like all this fun stuff. So I was very happy, actually, that I found that. So my suggestion is do upload stuff on all sorts of places. Forget the accounts. Someday.
It's a kind of archaeology,
yeah,
really.
You'll find
time capsule.
Your life history.
Yep.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I just flights of fancy. That's my that's me. Another Microsoft app for what? iPhone?
Yeah.
What? What is it this time?
It's a new scheduling app that's called Invite from the Microsoft Garage, which is their technology incubator.
I got an invite for Invite.
Did you?
And I actually didn't click on it. I thought this is because it went to an Azure site.
Yeah.
And of course, anybody can have an Azure site and put malware there if they wanted. And I just thought, so this was real?
It didn't say it was Microsoft's app.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it is.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like at Microsoft.com. It was at Azure.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah, this is their app. It's from their garage incubator. So it's not like the Outlook team did this.
I've been too well trained to do that, to click the link and the, especially since I don't remember asking. I might have asked for an invite.
Yeah. They made it available for people with iPhones and iPads who are also Office 365 business and school subscribers.
Yeah.
Yep. So you're right in that sweet spot. Yeah. Yep.
What does it do?
And it's supposed to be a lightweight scheduling app for groups. You know that feature that you have in, I think it's an iOS and Android, called Send Availability?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, except it's like one step above that. Mm-hmm. So even if all your participants can't see each other's calendars, it somehow lets you schedule group meetings.
Yeah. I think that's actually a really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. But right now, iPhone and iPad only, coming to Android and Windows Phone soon.
I guess that's what they've got in the labs, is they just got a bunch of iPads.
Yeah. You got to go where the users are these days, right?
Yeah, but do you have to rub it in their faces each and every time?
And Exchange has had that whole calendar sharing thing forever.
Right.
It's just been, you have to be using Outlook, right? That's still the pieces of Microsoft that are the walled garden. Well, as long as you're using all the Microsoft stuff, this works fine.
Yeah, but it's weird now, because as long as you're using iOS stuff, this works fine. That's weird.
That is weird.
I'll download it.
Give it a try.
Yeah, try it. Yeah.
Actually, it probably was Lisa or my staff that said, send Leo an invite, would you? We need to get him on the same page. Likes and mentions.
I want to hear what you guys think of this one.
Is this Facebook for Outlook?
No, this is Microsoft adding likes and mentions to Outlook.
You mean the email?
Yeah.
Oh, 2016. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't they have pokes?
I don't love this.
Let's have pokes.
Pokes are next, right?
Well, you know what it is it's trying to get rid of the emails where the reply is plus one.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, the solution to that is to smack people with a ruler. You just shouldn't do it in the first place, right?
Well,
but to try and build that functionality in the email so you can just see that it's there, okay.
So what is, so send me, okay, give me this scenario. Somebody sends me an email.
Right. So if you are on Outlook for the web, you know, which is Outlook web app, you're an Office 365 subscriber and you have Exchange Online as part of your subscription, you're going to start getting likes and mentions built right into your email. So, you know, if you're on an email thread with somebody, you can put like at Leo, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's kind of like what Facebook does, right?
The at Leo is great. But what is that app? Does that refer to exactly? Is that my Facebook account? Is that
no.
my Twitter
so if
account?
You do,
what is that?
If you do like at Leo, it'll just bring up your contact list in Outlook and it'll say, here is the contact you're probably referring to. So it's not connected to Facebook. It's your contact list in Outlook.
It's only your contact list.
I believe so.
But then it shows in the email as that, as at KD Jordan.
So like if you... Yeah, if you look at the picture in their blog post, it's got the people who you're talking to, their little thumbnail pictures, and then they say at Katie blah blah blah, and that person is one of those people who is in the list. It's just kind of a convenience thing. I don't know. I just don't feel like this belongs in work email. call me old-fashioned.
Oh, I don't know. I disagree. You know,
really?
Look, people
okay.
are using HipChat and Slack, and people have abandoned email in a lot of enterprises because it's so inefficient. They want this kind of quick back and forth. I think this is probably, I don't know, I bet you this is something people would like. You don't.
I mean, the alternative here is instead of using, before mentioned, you would CC that person onto the email.
Right.
And now
they've,
when they get around to reading their CC mail, and goodness knows I haven't done that since May, you try and figure out, why am I CC'd on this?
Yeah,
the upside of the mention is that you have that link right to where you are mentioned in the email.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's kind of a time saver. I think the mention makes more sense than the like. I mean, I've already suppressed the like behavior in general. Like, if you send me a plus one, I'm going to get angry with you. So don't do that. But so now they're actually fixed that. They say, well, here's you can plus one, and I have it tagged to the mail so I can see all the people who've liked it without having all those stupid mails.
It's Mary Jo, you don't work in a group, really, right?
I don't. So maybe this is why. If people started putting me, like, on a ZDNet thread and it was like, thumbs up, like, I'll be like, you guys, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah. It's exactly like that.
Yeah.
So, but I think that there's a point here that I'm finding organizations where they do not want to have conversations in email anymore.
No.
They have conversations in Slack.
That's why they use Slack.
Yeah.
Or HipChat.
Yeah,
we use HipChat.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
You're
it's
right.
It's
you're
fast,
right.
And I'm sure that's what Yammer is supposed to do, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It comes from that Yammer acquisition that they made, right? It's all that thinking about, this is how you start talking to people and interact in groups and that. That's where it's kind of threading in from here.
Right.
I don't know. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, brother.
Well, because it feels like, you know, the social network is bleeding into work.
Yeah.
Right.
But as it turns out, it is kind of how people want to do stuff.
People do work, especially younger employees, right?
Yeah.
Well, and in the enterprise where the email is the conduit of knowledge, you know, and that's where Delve and all that stuff started coming in, they don't want to try and integrate a new tool in like Slack. So they'd rather add, if they can get these capabilities added in, this delays a big jump.
True. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. You're making me rethink my hate.
Rethink the hate.
There you go. Find the love.
So if you got this message from Windows Update on your computer.
Oh, man.
And we've trained people. We have really trained people to be cautious. And a pop-up, you know, the malware pop-ups often say they're from Microsoft. They might even say Windows Update. You've got this really strange string of characters at the top. You may need to restart. Installation status failed. Eric, get help with this. If you saw this, what would you do? This update, what is that? Is that malware?
Virus scan immediately. This looks horrible.
Exactly. If I saw that, I would freak.
I know.
What is it?
So there was a report this afternoon on, I think it originated on Reddit, that said, Windows Update servers have been compromised. That's not what you want to hear as a Windows user.
Yeah.
But it turns out not. It turns out Microsoft say they incorrectly published a test update that's got a lot of gibberish in it, and that they're pulling that update. Still not very comforting that happened. But it's not Windows Update server being compromised, they say. They say it was a patch gone awry.
Nice.
We had a monkey in the lab. And he mashed
We haven't
the
been
keys.
Hacked. Somebody screwed up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's called keyboard mashing.
Well, I get the sense that they're working on a lot of automation for updates because they're going to happen more often and so forth. And it doesn't always go well.
Yep. True.
Doesn't always go well.
But don't panic. Is the theme on that one, if you see that.
Yeah. It's normal.
Not so normal, but.
Yeah. It's not the end of the world.
One thing I'll never forget when the .NET guys visited our studio and talked about bridges and lakes. And it just made me, I felt like I was at Banff again. Azure, doesn't it sound beautiful? Azure Data Lake.
It does.
I can hear the loons. What is Azure Data Lake. The loons, Mary Jo. The loons. What is Azure Data Lake?
Loons might be the right word here.
Nice.
Remember when we were all in Petaluma, we were all joking about Data Lakes, right? Well, guess what? this week, Microsoft talked about their whole strategy and rollout plans for Azure, what they're calling now Azure Data Lake. So it's great Richard is on here because he knows a lot about data lakes, I know, which is not a Microsoft term, but more of a generic industry term. Richard, tell us about data lakes.
Do you need a Docker when you go to the lake?
Yeah, you should. Docker will help you. You know, this is a sort of lashback against the data warehouse. So data warehouses are about taking all this different disparate data in the enterprise and trying to organize it into structured forms that you can then query against really fast. Data warehouses are an artifact of our on-premise data centers that were resource constrained. Data lakes is saying, hey, you're living in the cloud. You don't need to organize your data. Just leave it in the lake. Right? Collect as much as you can. Leave it as it is. Because when the only reason you organize data and sort it all carefully out and combine it properly so that you can query quickly. But when you have the cloud available to you, you could always query quickly. You just throw more horsepower at it. And that, you know, is where this is going, is this idea. You know, there's another side to this, which is, as a guy who made a lot of money on doing the analysis to build data warehouses, we spent a lot of time trying to anticipate need, and we were often wrong. You know, you're trying to figure out what people are going to query on and make sure those things were fast. If you leave the data as it is, it's all going to query about the same, and you can do a lot more exploration with it. And one of the problems that happens when you try and organize data is you start cutting off the rough edges. And that often is the most interesting data when you find out later anyway.
It is the kind of the future, and it's also very relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But is that Looms I hear in the background?
Yes. Yeah. I found the track.
First I was like, is that my headphone?
I like to play these so subtly that you might actually just think you're going crazy.
Yeah. That's, well, you also impersonated it very well. It sounded just like Leo.
It's funny because I remember Looms from my youth, but they must have been imprinted up here.
Yeah, deeply in your head. That's funny. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm excited about it for the sense that we're really getting tooling around managing large groups of data and being able to do that dynamic analysis. The other thing that's interesting is we're revisiting this decision made a while ago by Microsoft not to build a lot of this itself. They're staying on the Hadoop path as opposed to Project Dryad. Yep. We had the Dryad guys on .NET Rocks 4 or 5 years ago, and this was going to be their data warehouse tooling, and they walked away from it in favor of an open source project.
They did. And they did it at the last minute, too. They were just about to commercialize Dryad, and then they're like, you know what? Yeah. We're going to use Hadoop instead.
Yeah.
Boom.
It's shocking, really. And I know it hurts some feelings. There were unhappy people.
Yeah. Tell me, because I'm not an expert on this stuff, but it's kind of like freeform databases. Is it kind of like, I mean, is it less structured? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Well, not pre-organizing the structure. We don't need that structure anymore because we have enough
self-structuring.
Well, it can be organized any way you want. What we have now is tools that can scan so efficiently.
Right. It's you don't care. You don't have to index.
Essentially.
You don't have to do all the old.
You're going
to
build all those things on the fly.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
You don't need to do it in advance. The only reason you did it in the first place is because it took time. Mm-hmm. Now, when you have essentially unlimited compute, you don't care. Just query it. Go nuts.
Hmm. So,
you know, under the hood, you can get into the details under the hood of why is this actually possible. You know, Hadoop's magic skill is being able to fragment these terabytes and terabytes of data across many instances simultaneously so that they can query in parallel. But, you know, for you as an analyst, you don't care. You write the query and it happens. Magic happens. The fact that it harnessed 100,000 machines to do it, not your problem.
Yeah. And this is also acknowledging just the size of the data sets now. And you just can't treat it the way you used to treat it. It's big data now.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need to.
What's really cool for me is where this all originated, this whole idea of the Azure Data Lake, was when Microsoft had their own internal data lake that was known as Cosmos, basically. And they still use this inside Microsoft. So this is how they collect all the data they can get from like Xbox and Bing, and how they have their own internal tools to query that data. So what they did was they were thinking about how do we take that framework that's underneath that infrastructure and make it available to customers, not Microsoft's data, but the way they did it. And that is what Azure Data Lake ended up being. It's the store engine that they basically a derivative of their own store, their own analytics tools, and even their own language. They have this new language they're calling U-SQL, which used to be known as Scope at Microsoft. And that's what they use to query Cosmos. So it's kind of like they took all this stuff they learned themselves, and now they're turning it into something for customers. So it's kind of cool,
is
too.
Is this like NoSQL, Richard, kind of? Does that, you know what I'm talking about?
Well, the queries themselves are SQL-ish.
Yeah, so it is SQL.
Well, yeah, now you've got to separate this idea that NoSQL movement is not so much about the language that you query with and more about how you store data.
Right.
And you actually look at U-SQL and, okay, there's a select clause in there and there's an order by clause and so forth. But they do more of the common table querying. Yeah. You know what? When you read the language, you realize there's enough in common here that I'll think I know what I'm doing and I'll be wrong.
Good. That's what I look for in a language.
it's relatively terse, right? You create a definition for what a data you want to access and how you want to access it, and then you write an expression that allows you to access that data that is SQL-ish. The same way that in the programming side, link is SQL-ish. It uses select, it uses mm-hmm. where, it uses mm-hmm. order by. But enough people think that way that it's not that hard to actually get an expression across.
Gosh, you know, all right, you know better and they know better. I just feel like why, if you're going to do something that's a departure, why keep these old and fairly antiquated SQL commands? Is it because people just know that's what select means and so they just...
They're also not a bad way to describe it. You need a clause that says, right. Here's the data I want back.
Right.
You need a clause that says, right. Here's where I think you should get it from.
Right.
And you need a clause that says, here are how I'd like you to aggregate it.
Yeah.
And those are all very reasonable things to ask for. The fact that they use select, where, and order by, and group by, fine. You know, call it what you want.
It's not ultimately confusing.
No, not really. What it is, and this is no different than when you learn to write SQL. You're going to hack at it for a while.
Right.
You know, right. And you're going to cut and paste a lot of it.
Right.
And eventually there'll be better tooling around it. That's just normal.
Right.
Do you guys realize how many times we just said Hadoop, by the way?
And nobody laughed.
Paul, but everyone drank. Everyone drank.
They're all drunk now. Do you want to talk about HDI or HD Insight on Linux?
I think it's just worth mentioning that HD Insight on, which is Microsoft's Hadoop on Azure, distribution, not really distribution, but more their product, is now generally available. And that was part of this whole announcement around the data lake as well.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of stuff released around the Linux space too. DSC for Linux came out with 1.1. So, mm-hmm. you know, they've done some additions there. Like they're generally getting Microsoft management tooling to play nice with Linux.
Yep.
And that's interesting because an awful lot of their dev stuff's now running on Linux as well. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, then it's time for Azure Container Services.
You know what? This is the revenge for all those times I had to sit there when you guys were doing all Xbox.
I know. I'm just playing Xbox while you're talking. It's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fine.
We're like, so I'm so excited. With her.
If you want to talk Call Enterprise, of Duty, we'll be over here, kids.
Yeah, so this Richard probably also has a lot to say about, but... yesterday was a Microsoft virtual event called AzureCon, and they had a ton of announcements around Azure, all different new kinds of services for Azure. I thought the most interesting one they had was what they're calling Azure Container Service. And the reason it's interesting is just what we were talking about with Linux a second ago, which is Microsoft is suddenly partnering with all these open source companies who you can't even believe they're on the stage with them, right? So yesterday they were demoing, they had a demo of Azure working with Docker container management stuff and also Mesosphere's cluster management stuff all together, one demo showing people how, you know, you always thought Microsoft made you use just their tooling on just their cloud. And now suddenly they're working with all these companies who have very deep roots with a lot of startups and newer companies like Airbnb and Netflix. These are the kinds of tools that they're using to build their cloud solutions. And here's Microsoft suddenly finding ways to combine that with their own cloud. So I thought that was super interesting. This is something that they're going to have out in preview, this Azure Container Service, before year end. So it's imminent and very interesting. Did you catch any of that AzureCon stuff, Richard?
Absolutely. You know, they're a long way down the path with Docker. They're not done, but, you know, the Windows Docker containers work. There's going to be a Hyper-V Docker container as well, which is a little further on. I mean, that's all Server 2016 stuff, really. Yeah. But the cloud, you know, the whole point of containers is the container I run as a dev on my machine is the same container that should be able to run on-premise, is the same container should be able to run in the cloud. And that's important because it's about this configuration as code mindset. You know, you could think of it as virtualization. That's just fine. I'd say go ahead, use it as virtualization. The difference is it's a newer kind of virtualization where the definition of what that container is clearly outlined in code. You run that code to create that container. And it works in all of those spaces. So they're just starting to make that come true. The Mesosphere thing caught me by surprise because I've got nothing but respect for Marathon and what those guys have done over there. I just think it's early days yet.
Yeah.
That what that actually is going to look like is going to take a little while. The same way that, you know, they talked about Docker a year ago.
Right.
So now, you know, Docker's coming true. I feel like Mesosphere is at that year ago phase too. They're just starting to have the conversation about what that's going to mean. But it's cool. They're good. They're choosing not to build big cloud management tools for the containers. They're using the ones that everybody else uses.
That's good.
It is.
And this previous discussion, which much like a U-SQL, I understood all the words.
Paul always, when I write these stories about this stuff, he goes, Mary Jo, air-shaped words. Any of this is. That's how I feel about Xbox. So
it's perfect. It's fine. You know what? When the cat's away, the mice will play, or vice versa.
Paul's not. You know, my background is in web performance things, like building large scale websites.
Yeah.
And every one of those was a one off back in the 90s when we were doing this.
Nightmare.
And in the
nightmare,
it was very challenging. Yeah. And the idea that we're building common sets of tools so that scaling is inherent.
Yeah.
This is where we're going.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. And again, this is the new Microsoft. I love this.
Mm-hmm. It's not that they're, I'm not surprised that they're making it. I'm surprised that they're using other people's stuff to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, not very common up to now.
No.
And now it's become almost de rigueur.
Well, and then, you know, the funny part is at this particular moment, Microsoft is falling more strongly on the open source, open resource approach to containers than even Google is with Kubernetes or Azure's own container service. They're actually looking more proprietary than Microsoft's approach at this point. Hmm. You know, there's still stuff to be done.
Right.
But, yeah, we're in a weird place.
It's a new
up
world.
Up is down and left is right.
It's a brave
black
new world.
Is white.
And it's good. It's good. Yeah. And Darkstorm mentioned in the chat room that Microsoft's contributing back into the open source community, which is part of the deal, by the way. When you use this stuff, it's considered the done thing to then any contributions you make, resubmit them to the community. So they're doing that. They're being a good citizen of the open. That's great. That's great. Quick question, and then let's look at our calendars. El Khalif in our chat room wants to know, OneDrive for Linux, anyone? Is there any? Have you seen anything, heard anything? Is that really crazy?
Not heard
that crazy talk.
About that.
No, not a thing. All right. There's your answer, El Khalif. Doesn't mean they're not doing it, just means no one's heard a thing.
Nope.
So, next Tuesday, bright and early, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern time, Mary Jo and Paul will be at the event. And then right after, you guys are going to have a meetup.
Yep.
Time, guess.
4 to 7.
4 to 7.
At Rattle and Hum, our favorite watering
hole.
Yay.
Now that I've been there.
Now you can feel the love.
Yeah, and I want to go back. I really liked it. It was fun.
We got to get Richard there. I don't think he's been there with us. Have you,
Richard, you got to go to these meetups.
I never have. Yeah. Where is this?
This is our favorite craft beer bar in New York called Rattle and Hum, where we have a lot of meetups and such. Next time you're in New York, you'll have to come.
Yep.
They have hard liquor as well, not just craft beer.
Remember that all whiskey is beer grown up, right?
I mean, is it? Okay.
It started. They all start as barley. It's wort in the beginning. It's just beer takes a terrible turn. You know, the hops thing, like, that's just a mistake. Distill.
No, you sound like Paul.
It's so simple. It's beautiful. It takes a few years, but what you get out the end is better for you, really.
I should look and see. I bet you still have some of that.
What is that? Well, you took that Abeler Abanunth and you hid it away. I watched you do it.
Yeah. I think I have maybe a fingerful left.
It's in his time capsule somewhere.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, but next it was time one you're in New York, you'll have
to.
Uh-oh. Someone stole it.
It was four bottles we brought up to him of different.
I know. We went through almost all of them.
somebody stole it and replaced it with Woodford Reserve. Jeez.
Not the same at all. Although I have a story about Woodford Reserve if you ask me about a whiskey.
Really?
Absolutely.
Well, why don't you save it for the beer segment?
Yeah, I will.
We've got a whiskey pick today, too.
Ah, nice. So don't forget, Rattle and Hum, 4 to 7 p.m., October 6th. Mary Jo will be there. Paul will be there?
Yes, Paul will be there. So will a number of other Microsoft watchers and friends. Press Microsoft people are coming too.
Nice.
So should be a pretty good meetup. And you don't have to RSVP. Just come. Yep.
Paul will have stayed that night at the Yale Club. So
that's right.
If he seems a little bit smarter.
That's why.
Yep. I just thought I'd give him a taste of what the other half lives.
Nice.
It'll be like Goodwill Hunting. Hey, what do you call that, Dave? We call that a Manhattan. October 26th through 29th. Of course, it's your conference, Richard, the Dev IT intersection in Vegas. And technology willing, we will be doing the show from down there.
Yes, I think we have a solution. I have been conferring with the logistics folks, and I believe we can make it work.
We don't need much. We just need bandwidth in a room.
That's it. And thousands of adoring fans, I'm sure.
And we'd absolutely love to have a live audience.
Yeah, I think we're going to do it that way.
Okay, good.
Yep.
It won't be the fanciest setup. It's whatever Lisa and I can carry.
No, yep. It'll be fun.
I think we're going to bring, we're not going to bring a switcher. We're just going to bring a camera. We're going to stream it so you can watch it live. Bring a few microphones. Literally, no lights. It'll just be what Lisa and I can carry.
Well, we've got some gear there as well because we're doing some stuff too. So I think we'll pool our resources, try and make the best show
we
can make.
Yeah, we should talk then because I don't want to bring anything down I don't need.
Yeah.
When we fly on these little turboprops that have this much luggage space.
Dude, I would drive.
No, no,
I'm
not driving. Are you kidding?
Yeah. I love that drive. That's a great drive.
I got a life.
Yeah.
But
I have a fast car.
Yeah. Actually, if I let Lisa drive, it'd probably be there in half an hour. We'll ship a Pelican case back.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
John wants to drive. John's driven it many times, haven't you, John? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good drive. I believe Uber even offers a service.
What? Uber? San Francisco to Vegas?
Yeah. Oh, and the guy stays over with you and brings you back again.
Now,
it's worth looking at.
Yeah. By the time you add the drive to the airport, the wait at the airport.
Yeah. The soul-sucking experience of the airport.
It might even be as fast and certainly be more.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
Do they have a convertible? Well, can we blare Tom Petty as we drive?
The whole way.
The whole way? November 16th. What is VS Live in Orlando, Mary Jo?
So that's a show that I'll be speaking at. It's a different conference. It's mostly web-oriented, web developer stuff. And I'm going to give just a general keynote address there with my friend Andrew Brust. We do kind of a live Q&A thing there at the show and talk a lot about Microsoft, where they're going, what's next, and all that. So if you're going to VS Live on November 16th, I think that's the first day of the show in Orlando, I'll be the keynoter there.
Nice. And it is at the Universal Studios, so bring the family. I love it when they do conferences like this so you can bring the family. They can have fun, and then you go to the event.
Yeah.
Sign up soon, though. You only have 2 weeks left to get the early bird deal. It ends October 14th. Nice. That'll be fun.
Yep.
And finally, we're all going to Manchester.
Yeah, we're going to Manchester,
actually,
UK.
You're going. I wish I were
going. I'm going.
Although November 18th, it might actually be kind of chilly.
It'll be a little chilly. Yep.
Yeah.
There's a new one-day free conference for Microsoft development community happening in Manchester on November 18th. It's called Stacked 2015. That's the URL, stacked2015.com. And I'm going to be there, too. And we're going to do Windows Weekly live from there like we did from London earlier this year.
That was fun.
So that was really fun. So we're going to have a live audience here also. And we'll do it at the regular time of Windows Weekly. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, it'll be great. I think it'll be really fun.
Will Paul be there, too?
He's not going to be there.
So but, you'll be there, and we'll have Paul in Boston. And then I'll be here, and it'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
We'll talk lots of... Maybe have a chance to talk a little dev on the show and get some devs giving us some live cues there.
That looks like fun.
Yeah, should be good.
And
Manchester.
I've
never been to Manchester.
No, me
and
neither.
I hear there's pretty good pubs up there.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying.
And the Mancusian accent or whatever they call themselves, Manchugians. I do this. I get this wrong every time. I apologize. We have many viewers in Manchester. I apologize for getting it wrong. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, the back of the book, which includes tips, picks, and whiskey. Uskaba. First, though, I want to talk about your enterprise and how you communicate with employees and staff. Do you have an intranet? I can make your internet better, your intranet better. igloosoftware.com/Twit. Anyone that's ever worked in a corporate environment, knows how painful the internet can be. We had somebody call just the other day and say, "My boss wants to make sure it works with IE6." At least that's better than requiring IE6. Anyway, not Igloo. Igloo's state of the art, up to date, everything social. You've got the comments and the like buttons we were talking about. Anyone can add content. Of course, you've got permission, total permission control all around with that. Let me just show the site. There it is. It's responsive, so for free, you get the mobile as well as a desktop site. Whether you're a large enterprise that's sadly stuck using SharePoint or a fast-growing business overwhelmed by the tools and the choices and the platforms, you can now create an intranet that matches your brand's look and feel, simplifies how you work, and is accessible anywhere on any device. But, of course, secure a variety of authentication and identity services to choose from. Everything's private, authorized users, of course, only, and with 256-bit encryption over SSL2. Unlike other solutions, you get the entire suite of tools for one low price, as little as $3 per user a month, and there's even volume pricing that could bring that price down. Used by government agencies, companies too, like Hulu, Inventive Health, American Family Insurance, Ipswich. I want you to try it for free. Go to igloosoftware.com/twit, and when you sign up through the link and get your own Igloo for up to 10 people, absolutely free, as long as you want, free forever. Yes. igloosoftware.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. Maybe it's something from Rhode Island that I grew up in Rhode Island, and Rhode Islanders pronounce things weird. our water in school, the water fountains in the school are called bubblers. And
yeah, bubblers. That's Massachusetts too.
Yeah. And we didn't have hoagies or submarine sandwiches. We called them, what do we call? I forgot now. But I remember that a milkshake was called a cabinet.
Was it a grinder?
Grinder? Yeah, no, I think that was Connecticut. We called them grinders when I was in college. I'm trying to remember what they called them in Providence.
Far south.
In Providence, they also like coffee, this coffee drink. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. What is that thing called?
The thing is, there's two different coffee syrups. There's Eclipse, and I can't remember the other one because I wouldn't touch it. And you squirt it in the glass, kind of like Bosco.
Yeah.
Do they still have Bosco?
I know.
Probably
Bosco.
Yep. Do they?
They still make.
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure.
It's out there.
You squirt
it
in the glass.
Not in Canada. Maybe it's left the U.S. It's just
lives in Canada. It's only in Canada now. What do you. Yeah, see, I would trust a Canadian to tell me how to pronounce Igloo. You're closer to the North Pole.
Well, people ask me if I live in them. Says, yep, got Ethernet jacks and everything.
all right, let's start with our tip. Now, I don't know how this is going to go. I guess Richard, you're going to take the tip of the week?
Sure. We want to talk a little bit about Humanitarian Toolbox.
What is that?
So at htbox.org, charity I helped organize a few years ago, we build open source software for disaster relief organizations.
Nice.
Volunteer development. My real goal there was providing a way for my friends who are developers to be able to contribute to charities using their skills. Just recognizing that software is never free. Software is free like a puppy is free. You know, they whatever software you write, people have to live with that software. So we are the care and feeding part of keeping that software
really like
alive.
That. Software is free like a puppy is free.
That's
I
right.
love that.
And so the project you're seeing front and center there is one called Already, which we've been working on in conjunction with the Red Cross. Pretty straightforward application. It's about connecting skilled volunteers, in this case, as an example, volunteer firefighters who know how to install smoke detectors to get smoke detectors into people's homes that don't have them.
Fantastic.
And so giving them a nice mobile app that'll show them the nearest folks around them so they can get there and get those smoke detectors installed. And that built all through volunteer efforts.
I hate you, Richard. You're so much of a better person than I am. This is just awesome, man.
It's been really a lot of fun to put together. And it is a registered charity. You can donate there if you'd care to donate with a tax deduction and so forth. We've been working with lots of different really cool organizations over the years to try and get the right software to the right people.
htbox.org.
Right.
So if you're are you looking for developers? What are you looking for?
Primarily developers with mobile skills, with web development skills. We're always looking for good design, too. We had a nice group of folks come through that were designers that gave a much nicer look to a bunch of apps. That was really appreciated.
It's actually a beautiful site, yeah.
Nice. We had a group of testers at a conference decide to spend a day beating the snot out of one of our apps. I think we got 400 work items out of it. Testers are evil. They think of things you just can't imagine. So there's lots of different skills there. If you sign up on the site, all of the software is on GitHub at HTBox. So, you know, we don't pick winners here one way or the other. It's free software. You can download it. You can use it any way you want. And we're happy to share.
What a great idea.
So far, so good, man. It's been a lot of really challenging to get it to the right place, but we're making progress.
It reminds me of Code for America, which was another kind of great benefiting.
Absolutely. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool organization.
Yeah. Man, I gave $10 to a bum earlier today.
To almost the same thing.
That's about it. Oh, man. All right. And you've got also some software. Actually, I know this one. Go ahead. Tell us about it.
What software do you think I'm going to mention?
Well, I thought you were going to mention Kerbal.
I was going to mention Kerbal. You're exactly right. You talk about a game you want to play with Oculus Rift.
Ooh.
You know,
so what is this? Tell us about it.
So this is the most advanced Unity game ever made. It is basically, I call it Minecraft for space geeks. So the same way, you know how Minecraft is just that you're building your own little world, your own way? This is building your own space program.
Oh, neat.
From research, basic flight, flying to the moon, all of those things possible in there. And I liken it to gardening. I have a garden inside this computer that is a little space program I'm inventing.
Wow.
I get an hour every so often. It's my reward for getting the next piece written or the next set of abstracts done or booking the next four shows. And I'll go spend an hour playing a little Kerbal. And on my LG 30-inch curved display,
ooh,
that's
fun.
Very just gorgeous to look at. So I'd love to see this in Oculus. I think it would just grab a hold of me. But
HoloLens would be cool too.
I think it'd be really interesting to see it that way, just to be able to be more immersed in that. There are definitely moments, you know, climbing out of the atmosphere on the top of a rocket, and the sun comes up. It's just gorgeous.
So when you say really Minecraft, cool. This is nice 3D rendered stuff.
Yes.
It's not out.
This visually is impressive, but Minecraft in the sense that is your world to create the way you want to make it.
Is there cooperative gaming or online gaming, or is it just kind of solo?
it's really meant to be a solo game, but there's a huge community of add-ons out there, and one of the add-ons is a multiplayer capability. Nice. And a couple of different ways to approach, I've seen multiplayer add-ons. One has been a real mission control, where one of you is the astronaut in the ship with just the dash, and the other one is a mission controller that's external, or a chase plane, that sort of thing. I've also seen air-to-air combat multiplayer, but the focus of the game is very much a single-player game.
This is... The asteroid redirect mission.
Yeah, which is a bear. That is not an easy mission to pull off.
Save the world. Hey, if it's Bruce Willis can do it, anyone can.
There you go. Well, it turns out
spell it out.
K,
what this is.
You're right. Thank you, because it's not. It's herbal with a K. K E R B A L.
Yes.
Website, if you want to try it out, is Kerbal Space Program, K-E-R-B-A-L, spaceprogram.com.
And it is on Steam, if you want to just keep it all in one place.
How much is it?
$20.
Nice.
Not an expensive game.
You know, I want to get the kid doing this, because I bet you let's not say educational, but I bet you learn some stuff.
It's absolutely educational. So I admit, every so often I'll go talk to middle schoolers and the such about computer careers. And as soon as I mention Kerbal, you know the kids that are playing it. Because we start arguing orbital mechanics.
Oh, good.
Do you prefer a Holman transfer? No, man. I like direct insertion. Okay, but what about arrow braking when you come through the direct insertion? Well, as long as you keep your retrograde orientation correct, it is a ton of fun.
I'm going to get Michael into this because he loves computer games, and I think this would be a great educational. We won't mention the E word, but educational.
Well, yeah, that moment where you realize I can play this game better if I read Buzz Aldrin's research paper on orbital mechanics. That's where you get to.
$40 if you sign up today. $40, but that's well worth it. Yep.
I was one of the beta guys, so I've had it for a long time.
Kerbal spaceprogram.com.
Good
and
fun.
Mary Jo Foley with an equally exciting enterprise pick of the week.
It's tough to go up against that one, but I'm going to try. So my enterprise pick of the week is two new Windows 10 resources that Microsoft just recently published very quietly that I think people should know about. So we're going to make this not quiet. One of them is an activation in Windows 10 page. All those questions people had about activation, like all the different scenarios. What if I have this? What if I do this with my hardware? Am I going to have to enter a product key or is it just going to recognize me? Finally, there is a single page that addresses many, I would say most of these scenarios. So I have a link to that in my blog post. I also have a link to a guide that Microsoft published that was we could have used this a while ago. This is how the different branches of Windows 10 work. So remember we were talking about current branch for business, long-term servicing branch. And we were trying to decipher what that all meant and how often you were going to have to update and when. Well, finally, there is a page, Introduction to Windows 10 Servicing, that explains all of this. It's still not easy to figure out, but at least there is now an official Microsoft page with an explanation of how this works. So I have in my blog post, which will be in the show notes, the links to both of these two guides, and they're worth checking out if you're a business, and even if you're a consumer, you might want to check them out too.
If you're just confused.
If you're just confused.
And would like to know. You know, I have to read this because people ask me this all the time.
Yep. The activation page is great. It's like, if you are doing this, here's what, if you're going to have to enter a product key, when or when you're not going to have to enter one. Very helpful.
How you got Windows and then the activation method. Yep. I like the words digital entitlement.
Yeah. Digital entitlement means it automatically recognizes you, basically. And you don't have to enter the product
key. And as Paul said, by the way, this is for the upgrade from 7 or 8 to Windows 10. That entitlement is not your entitlement. That's the computer's entitlement.
Right.
So it doesn't follow you in any way. And if you give away the computer, it would follow the computer.
It does. Yep.
But it doesn't follow you. So if you put a new motherboard, hard drive, and and a monitor on it, it's not gonna apply. Well, this is
They address that scenario too. If you change your hardware, what happens?
Do they? Oh, good.
Yeah, that's one of the questions too.
Yeah, it's actually a very short paragraph.
It is.
Yeah, Windows 10 might not be activated if you replace your motherboard.
Right. Click here.
Yeah. And then click here and then call us and we'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. Actually, you know what? That qualifies. That's almost as good as the Kerbal Space Program. That is awesome. And now our code name picks of the week.
Yeah. So I'm going to breeze through this because we kind of addressed it earlier when we were talking about Azure Data Lake. But as I mentioned, a lot of those pieces that are part of it, Azure Data Lake, came from Cosmos. We talked about Cosmos as being the way Microsoft collects the data and keeps it in its own data lake. Scope was the name of the language that became USQL. That was the code name for that. Kona and Cabo, which I had as code names a while ago, and we were like, wow, what are those things? There's some kind of data store and some kind of analytics engine. Well, those also ended up being parts of Azure Data Lake. So all those code names, Kona, Cabo, Cosmos, and Scope, are all things that eventually have become Azure Data Lake.
And so you get four code names. One of them is a lake.
One of them is a lake.
Oh, which one's a lake?
No, none of them.
None of them is a lake. Not one.
No, I don't think any of them are lakes. No, no.
They missed a great bit there. Yeah. They could have had some great lakes.
I know that would have been actually fun if the code names were lakes. Yeah, right? But they were not.
Great or little.
But yeah, four code names for the price of one.
Kona, Cabo, Cosmos, and Scope. The names of our four cats, actually, coincidentally. All right, let's do a beer pick of the week.
Yes. Before I do the beer pick of the week, is there somebody in the audience today whose name is, where is it? Brian Condren. Is he there?
Brian Condren sitting right across from me. Hmm. How'd you know that?
How did I know that? This is the guy who got Paul turned on to some great beer when he was in Ireland.
Aha. He's a Galway hooker himself.
Yep. Had to give him a shout out before I do the beer pick.
That's so funny. They're thanking. Wait, she's listening and nodding and beaming. So thank you, Brian. Where in Ireland are you from?
Dublin.
Nice.
Nice.
Thank you for bringing Paul beer.
Yeah. Yep. So he might this beer pick.
He says he brought me beer,
too.
Did
he really? He brought you some?
I was being... Oh.
Oh, nice. Because Paul loved the beer.
Brian, you didn't have Brian to, but thank you. What did you bring Paul? Is this what you brought him?
I met Paul in the brew pub from that brewery.
So it was from this brewery, Galway Bay Brewery.
Nice.
And it's Full Sail, dry hopped... Oh, you better not bring this to Paul. IPA. Thank you, Brian. That's awesome. I'll drink it
all the way from Ireland. Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Andy says, Full Sail flies out the door of our Dublin bars. The fresh and happy IPA is super with spicy dishes like Indian or Mexican. Oh, I should do that. That sounds good. Thank you, Brian. Very nice. All right, now it's time for your beer.
So I don't have an Irish beer pick, unfortunately, but I do have a seasonal beer pick, which if you ever get to try this, it's amazing. It's called Brewery Autumn Maple. It's from a brewery called The Brewery.
B-R-U-E-R-Y.
U-E-R-Y in California, Southern California. And I'm not a huge fan of pumpkin beers, but this beer is great. It's made with yams, actually, and maple syrup. And it has some pumpkin pie spices in it, but not overly spiced. It's a little heavy. It's 10%, which is pretty high for a beer. But if you want to have like a beer that's dessert-like, but not too cloying and overly spiced, and you want to kind of do the seasonal thing, I recommend Brewery Autumn Maple.
This sounds good.
It's very good.
I really like how they're doing beers that are basically foodstuffs.
I know, right?
Yeah. Beers you could make pie with, you know?
Yep.
They say 17 pounds of yams per barrel. It's aged in bourbon barrels. Mm-mm-mm.
It's pretty good. I think Richard Campbell would enjoy that one.
Cinnamon, nutmeg.
That's a sturdy beer you're talking
sturdy
about there.
There's a good word.
And bourbon barrels.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good thing. Good. Taking some of the essence out.
Was this on tap at Rattle and Home?
Rattle. Of course it was.
Man, I'm so jealous that you... Although I would weigh 800 pounds if I went there every night. So.
I know. It's hard not to try them all.
All right. And did you want to do a little Ooskabah?
I thought I'd go American this time around. Oh. I mean, certainly we had a fine Abelard for you last time.
That was so
But
good.
I wanted to mention a whiskey that is not as commonly known, and it's Angel's Envy.
Now, I have some. Did you? Wait a minute. You just muted yourself. You're talking, but nothing's coming out. He's not hearing me either.
Bourbon. It's made in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, you want to think that it's all normal. But the story is really interesting of why this liquor exists. So there's a fellow who has now passed away. His name is Lincoln Henderson. And he is a master distiller who was largely responsible for the creation of Woodford Reserve, which is outside of Frankfort in Kentucky. And Woodford Reserve is an unusual bourbon in the sense that it's distilled in Scottish cask distilleries rather than using a column still, which most bourbons are done in. They use purely a Scottish process, a three-stage process to make Woodford Reserve. And that was Lincoln Henderson that drove a lot of that. And he has a son whose name is Wesley Henderson, who comes – this is a long family in Kentucky, a long-duration family that has made bourbon since before Prohibition. And so Wes decided to create something entirely new and convinced his grandfather or his father to come out of retirement to make this Angel's Envy.
Wow.
And the name's kind of a pun because in the whiskey business, we talk about the – and I'm not in the whiskey business. I'm just a professional alcoholic. We talk about the angel's share. So in the barrel rooms, a certain amount of alcohol will leak from the barrel, and it sticks to the ceilings and things. You'll see it as a white crust in some of these buildings, and that they call the angel's share. And the idea of this is it's so good that the angels want more. They actually envy it.
They envy it.
And it's made in very small batches.
I did bring you a bottle of this. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, the Abelauer overrode that. But
no, but this, I remember you saying, try the Angel's Envy.
You should try the Angel's Envy.
Yeah, I remember you said
and
that.
And so the same way that the Abelauer, which is a Speyside whiskey, and they are aged in port barrels as well, this is American bourbon. So mostly corn, not just barley. There's a little bit of barley in it. And then aged in traditional American oak barrels that have been fired. But they finish it in the port barrels. And
nice.
It's made in very small batches. But it's quite inexpensive. It's about $40 a bottle in the U.S.
Wow.
More expensive in Canada and fairly hard to find. You have to look for this. They don't make a lot of it.
You know, I'll grant you that because after you brought it, I have not been able to find it ever since. I've looked all over the studio. Somebody took my they took their share of my Angel's Envy.
There you go.
It disappeared.
The angels got you.
Tony, I'm looking at you.
Nice.
No, we had a very nice whiskey tasting party after you guys left. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I think we had brought you up a Barter House as well, and that's especially mean because that Barter House 20, there's none of it. It's gone. There will never be another bottle.
You know, I wasted all this good whiskey on my staff.
Dude.
They were happy.
So, you know, when I bring you bottles, you should hide them.
Next time I will because it's all gone now.
I'll bring you two sets. I'll bring you stuff for people to drink and stuff you should hide away.
No.
My bar at home is set in three categories. The stuff I'll serve, the stuff, okay, you like bourbon, let's try this, and the, wow, you really know something about bourbon, try this.
I actually love bourbon. I think of all the kinds of brown liquors there are, I think bourbon's my favorite.
I wouldn't disagree with you, sir, but there are lots of variations on making bourbon.
Yeah, this Angel's
Envy
is good. Yeah.
It's a good way to go. And Woodford, I have no complaints about either. I think it's a very distinct
I have my own bottle of there back there. You know, it's funny, I don't really drink, so. You know, I have some vices. But for some reason, if I put liquor in that closet, it just lasts and lasts and lasts.
Nice.
Hey, this has been a lot of fun. Richard, thank you so much for filling in for Paul this week. I appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thank you.
Don't forget the IT Edge Intersection Conference, itedgeintersection.com. You follow Richard on the Twitter, at Rich Campbell, and of course, .NET Rocks! What's the other show you do? It's not about Windows.
Yeah, Run As Radio is an IT show.
Okay.
So for the operations folks.
Get the run as. It should have an ellipsis. Run as... radio.
that.
Put an ellipsis in there. And, of course, Mary Jo Foley, we couldn't do this show without her. It's always great to have her each and every week from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Next week, Paul and Mary Jo will be at the Microsoft event. And we'll be streaming that live very early in the morning, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. And then unless something like they announce something really major, I don't know what that could be, but something that's really world earth-shattering, we'll probably not try to get Windows Weekly in on Tuesday, but just do it on its regular time next week on Wednesday. But I'll reserve judgment because, you know, if something crazy happens.
Yeah, I know. We don't know. So
next week, as usual, Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800, Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, and Leo Laporte. And Richard, you have an open invitation. You must come back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Yes. Thanks for joining us. If you can't watch live, you can always get on-demand versions. It's an igloo, right? Versions of our shows at the website twit.tv/ww or wherever podcasts are aggregated, like iTunes and the Groove Store and all those places. And there's some great apps, by the way, for Twit on every platform. Windows Phone, of course, but also Windows 10. Our friend Dimitri Leon is currently working on an open source version using our new API for Windows 10, a XAML version. I can't wait. That'll be great. We'll let you know about that. iOS, Android, even Roku. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye. Fun show. That was fun. Somebody in the chat room said, can you give Richard a show? He's awesome.
Yes.
He has enough shows. Richard sounds like a very busy guy.
Whiskey Weekly.
Whiskey.
Yes. Ooh.
Mary Jo likes that too.
Whiskey and Beer Weekly. Let's do
there
it.
There you go.
I was thinking if we did a show, it should just be an all vice show. So it should be cigars, whiskey, beer, and chocolate.